You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and you're about to hear how the key to being a happy yogi is being a bad yogi. Whoa, talk about a cliffhanger. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. My guest today is a new kind of badass, a bad yogi with a nice ass, probably because she does lots of yoga. Erin Motz just reeks authenticity the same way that your sweaty yoga pants, well, just reek. The thing is, Erin's loud and proud about not being a traditional yogi, and she works long and hard to create a community where non-Sanskrit speaking, wine loving, raggedy yoga pants wearing yogis can unite. To date, with her brand, Bad Yogi, Erin has helped over 100,000 down doggers proudly celebrate the fact that they're bad yogis. I mean, she's essentially redefining yoga culture, kind of like how Airbnb redefined travel lodging, except those are two completely different things, so never mind. So Erin, thank you so much for coming on the Party in My Plants podcast.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. And I love the name of your podcast. I think it's so cute.
Thanks. I love the name of you, Bad Yogi. I think it's awesome.
Thanks.
Yeah. So you've been practicing and teaching yoga for how long?
Now I think it's about 11 years. It's been a time flies, right?
That is a long time. And when during those 11 years did you realize that you are not a traditional yogi?
Oh man, pretty much right from the beginning. I started, you know, quite a while ago before it was really trendy. So the people that I was around were the typical yogis, you know, green juice drinking, Prius driving, you know, these types.
What you see on TV.
yeah, exactly. What you see on TV. Exactly. And, you know, I felt like I always had to keep up appearances and I was always faking it to fit in and to just kind of look like the yogi that I thought I had to be. And so it wasn't until, you know, later on that I grew up a little bit that I was like, you know what? I'm just going to own this. I'm just going to be who I am. Yeah, I ate a burger before I came here. And yeah, I think that's okay, you know? And yes, you can come to my class if you don't have a moral obligation to cows or whatever. Mm. So I just really, it took me a while to come to that, but it's definitely, I think it was a good thing.
Yeah, I didn't honestly realize there was so much involved, you know, with the burgers and stuff. I didn't realize there was a quote unquote traditional yogi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you call yourself a bad yogi. And I'm wondering, how would you define a bad yogi?
So it's really just, it's kind of tongue in cheek, you know, because I get that a lot. We're like, oh, but you're not bad. Like, you're not an ass. So it's not so much about like your character is bad. It's about, you know, just a fun way to describe yourself as going against the grain a little bit. And it is for those people who feel like they don't fit in. It's for the people who feel like they have been an outcast in communities like that, who feel like they're kind of the black sheep. And I think that we all really need a refuge. And this is the refuge for people in the yoga community who feel like they're not fitting in there. And so I guess bad yogi encompasses a lot of people, not yeah. one type, but pretty much anybody who's ever felt like I don't belong.
So basically, a bad yogi is a unique individual, somebody that doesn't conform to all the traditional yogi ways, you know, someone that just practices yoga because it makes them feel happy and good and like a better person, you know, it's pretty much what we all should aspire to be, in my opinion.
Totally. And I think too, you know, what I've noticed is, you know, when we first started with Bad Yogi, I really expected people who were just that, they were just the outcast. And we ended up finding that we have those. And we also have the people who are the traditional yogis, but they're like, hey, you do you, you know?
Yes.
And so I think that's really cool too, that we have these traditionalists who are vegan, who drive the Prius, who meditate for 30 minutes every morning, but they're like, yeah, even if you don't do that, more power to you. And so I think it's just as important to like kind of like recognize, you know, high five emoji to those people too, you know? So I think it encompasses a lot of people, which is cool.
Yeah. So I'm crazy about your bad yogi creed. First, because it's pretty much the party in my plants creed too, if you just subbed bad yogi for party person, you know. And second, because it really just makes me feel lighter. Because your creed is exactly what yoga should be, but really often isn't. And what prevents so many people like myself from really embracing yoga in our day-to-day lives. So I would love to walk through your creed and hear your thoughts on my 7 favorite pillars. And I don't think I've ever said creed more times in my life. I don't think I've ever said it before, besides referencing the band. Creed.
But how often does that come up? I mean,
not anymore, maybe. Yeah, I don't know the creed. Anyway, so... Okay, the first pillar is that bad yogis don't do yoga to be part of the cool crowd. Preach. I love that. You nailed it. So why do you think there is so much elitism with yoga?
I think it's kind of part of being a human. You know, I think we all kind of crave that need to be better than other people, which in a way is natural in one way, but we also have to know when to turn that off. Like, which is many times, you know, but you turn that on for like certain strategic points in life, whether it's like for an interview and a job, I mean, whatever, but there might be a place for ego and for that. But when it comes to just being around other people and going to a yoga class, like it doesn't matter. You shouldn't look the person next to you up and down and give her the side eye if she doesn't have the perfect messy bun and Lululemon pants and mala beads, you know? So I think that's kind of like, okay, let's know when to turn it off.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty confident person, I will say. And fitness has been a part of my life for most of my life. And I've tried tons of different forms of exercise. But no matter what, I always feel wildly insecure and awkward when I get to a yoga studio. No matter what. I just feel judged and like an outcast and just like icky. And I feel like that's not what yoga is supposed to make you feel like.
Mm-hmm. That's so true. I remember a few years ago, one of the first things I ever wrote and put on the internet was a piece called Yoga's Dark Side. And at the time, that was like something that had never been talked about. But that exact feeling of like, why is it that a yoga studio feels like the most judgmental place on earth when that should be a safe haven, you know? And it is so true. It's so easy to feel that way. And I know that there are good places out there, but it is true that many of them kind of breed that feeling of elitism and arrogance. And it's just, that's not cool.
Not cool at all. So your first pillar, bad yogis don't do yoga to be part of the cool crowd, is cool. I think that's cool because you shouldn't. I mean, you're doing it to make yourself happier and feel better. And I'm sure we'll get into all the great things about yoga, but I hope that people can find a place, be it through your videos or find a studio, and we can talk more about this later, but to find a place where it doesn't feel like they're just being judged the moment they walk into the room. And also work on not judging other people if you do have a kick-ass messy bun and Lululemon pants.
Totally. Exactly. Yes. Totally. 100%.
So pillar number 2 is that bad yogis don't need to be able to do difficult poses perfectly or have their own Instagram hashtag.
Yeah. That's another thing, especially with social media having like exploded for the yoga community in the past couple years. Like especially a new person coming in is like, oh, well, yoga is for people who can do fill in the blank.
Handstands, headstands. Exactly.
Yeah. Ridge. Or even crazier things. You know, like flip your leg behind your head and do these insane poses. And it's like, that is, first of all, that's a tiny, tiny, tiny snapshot of someone's practice. And it is for a highlight reel, essentially, you know? So it's like, don't make a sweeping generalization about what, you know, what you need to be to do yoga if you're looking at that. This is not, plus, you know, that's not really what you're going to find with with my classes anyway. I like functional things. So yeah. No legs behind the head here.
And I mean, and all that stuff, I think, just makes yoga feel competitive. Again, back to the whole elitism thing, but like yoga feels so competitive. Like I feel like if I'm in a class and I'm using a block or a strap, or I get like corrected by the teacher, I'm losing at yoga. I just lost. Yeah. I lost the class. I failed. Yeah. You know, or like if you do a handstand after Savasana when everyone's folding up their mats, like you won. Like high five, I won the yoga.
Yeah.
So like what is up with this? Why has this become the case? And I don't know, is there any remedy for it other than just like a home practice?
You know, that's really funny that you say that. I think that's totally true. And I think that it comes back to that one, actually my partner always references this, so I'll steal this from him. He always says that, you know, the first rule of war is to know yourself. And I think that's kind of how we should go into all of these things, yoga included. So when you walk into a yoga class and you know that you might be more like type A competitive, you know, like when Shavasana comes, just, you know, maybe not kick into 14 handstands at the end of class. And if you want to do that, you know, maybe do it in a place that is more individual, like your own personal studio or your home. Because it, I think in a class, just being mindful of the community aspect there is really a generous thing. And it's generous to be able to go there because you have the hosts, you know, the studio owners, whatever. And then it's generous you giving your presence. So it's kind of everybody be cool. We're back to that. Be cool.
Yes.
But yeah.
Just pump the brakes, people. Yeah. I mean, this is just what I love about you and the movement with Bad Yogi that you've created. It's just, it's informing people that there's a different way to go about yoga that's not about competing or feeling less than other people.
Yeah, totally.
It's
totally
so
agree.
Refreshing because I really,
thank you.
I mean, it's just, it just takes away everything good about yoga when you feel judged and like you lost and like everyone's staring at you and the teacher corrects you. Oh gosh, maybe I'm just a super competitive person, but I'm not trying to compete with anyone. I just feel judged.
No, I think, but you know, I think that we all are that on some level, even if you're not quote unquote super competitive. I mean, we all want to walk into a place and not be a total beginner. You know, we don't want to feel like, wow, we're at step zero. So I think we all have that desire. I don't even think it's just a certain type. So yeah. I get it.
So this next one is great because it's Bad Yogis understand that yoga is about feeling good, not just looking good. So
yeah.
Talk to us about how yoga helps us feel good.
I mean, where do you start, right? I mean, I think it kind of goes back to the Instagram thing where like you see some of these things and you're like, whoa, that is the most impressive shape I've ever seen a human body make, you know? But then you really have to ask yourself, like, what is this functionally doing? You know, there are a lot of these, I'll say like Instagram yoga poses, you know, that are just made up for Instagram basically. Mm. That are completely non-functional and honestly oftentimes really harmful, not just in the short term, but in the long term, you know? Like I'm a really big believer that poses that push you really far beyond a natural, let's say, flexibility, it's just that has no place. And you know, maybe some people are fine sacrificing their body for this craft. But if you're just trying to do yoga to like be healthy and feel good, that is not a direction you need to go in, you know? So it's like drop the idea that you need to do something to like look really advanced and focus on what the pose feels like, you know? So like, do I feel strong? Do I feel like, oh yeah, that really stretched my back. Forget what it looks like, but does it feel good? So I think that's the question we should all move from.
Right. And when you say functional, when you say that some of these crazy things we see on Instagram aren't functional, what do you mean by that?
Okay, so let's say you do down dog. Down dog is functional in that it's strengthening the shoulders, but it's also kind of opening up the chest. You're going to feel stretched on your hamstrings. So it has like a reasonable benefit to your body. Yeah. Whereas like, I'm just going to use this because people, you know, it's kind of a dramatic image, but you know, you've seen people like put their legs behind their head.
Yeah.
Like this doesn't really, okay, is it stretching your muscles around your hip? I mean, I guess, but is that, when will you ever need to do that in your life? You
right, know? Yeah.
Whereas like at least in your life, yeah, you're going to need to be able to bend down and touch your toes and pick stuff up, etc., you know? So down dog is kind of functionally close enough, stretching those areas, using those areas, but like these more extreme things, they don't resemble any shape that you would take naturally in your life at all, like even a little bit.
That makes, yeah, that's very true. Not even a little bit, unless you're in the circus or something.
Right.
Auditioning for like America's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot of those contortionists on there. So when you say that yoga is more about, you know, first and foremost about feeling good, not just looking good, I mean, that's exactly what I believe with Party in My Plants and just healthy eating in general too, because if you're just trying to eat healthfully to look a certain way, those results are going to come later. What you're going to feel immediately is energized or lighter or freer or calmer or fuller, more grounded. And then after you do it for a while, you'll, you know, start to see your pants looser and your skin clearer and all that. And I feel like yoga is the same way, right? Like what,
totally.
What types of like immediate feeling good benefits can you get like after a class?
Well, I love what you're saying too, because, you know, I think if you're like, okay, I'm only doing this basically because I want to fit into this other dress, mm-hmm. you know, like there's a timeline on that goal. So it's like, it's not a sustainable habit at that point because you're not doing it because it's coming from inside, you know? Mm. And so with yoga, I think just like with eating well, okay, you start to feel better when you start eating well, especially if you're in it for that and not just for vanity. And with yoga, it's the same thing. So it's like you come to a yoga class and let's assume that you feel good in the yoga class. You know, it's not a crappy, judgy place to be. And you move your body in a way that you're not used to moving, and it's not complicated, but you're like, oh, that feels really good. Oh, wow. I didn't know that I actually felt tight here. Or, oh man, I've literally never felt this part of me when I twist. And then you have your meditation and you're like, I can't believe that 3 minutes of quiet time just kind of reset me. And so I think it comes with a lot of little personal revelations and little moments of feeling good. And feeling good is always nice. And it's also really great to feel like you're getting to know yourself too. Yeah. You know, when somebody tells you like, oh, your left hip is tighter than your right, you're like, oh my gosh, tell me more. What else is there? And so it's kind of a constant, you're doing that for yourself by doing yoga, because you're constantly learning new things and your body's always changing.
Right. Yeah. And I think a lot of people, myself included, I mean, most people that really practice yoga regularly, especially here in New York where I live, where everyone is very image conscious, but
yes,
I think a lot of yogis are seen as really thin and fit and toned and just like have really hot bodies. And I think a lot of people assume, oh, I just got to do yoga and I'll get that body. But
yes,
that might come really down the line. But first, wouldn't you agree to just focus on how great you feel after one class?
Totally. Yes. And I think here's another secret, you know, I mean, a lot of these people, like professional teachers, I'll use myself as an example. So when I was teaching full time, I had I looked pretty fit, like I had muscle definition, etc. And it was also because I wasn't doing one class, you know, 3 times a week. I was teaching 4 classes a day, 7 days a week, and on top of that, I would go to the gym. So it's like a lot of times what you see isn't necessarily from like a small action that you feel like you're taking that matches theirs, you know? So it's like, you can't, but that goes with everything. You can't look at someone and assume that they do something. And if you do that thing, then you'll just look just like them. I mean, that doesn't work.
That's all we do though. Everyone does that. Everyone does. Yeah. You know, I'll eat what you eat, what that celebrity says they eat because they're thin and that must be working for them.
Yes, exactly.
But I love your honesty. That's really cool that you're so transparent about that. And it's so true. I mean, and that's the thing. You have to do yoga. I mean, listen, full transparency, I don't practice yoga nearly as much as I would like to. And we will definitely talk about that. But but when I do it, I'm not doing it to change my body. I'm doing it for the physical, emotional, immediate results, immediate feeling change.
Mm-hmm.
Flipping that, I think, is a really good motivator to continue doing yoga.
Yes. And, you know, I don't even think that, oh, it's, you know, I don't want to villainize the idea of having a goal in yoga. You know, if you go in and you're like, yeah, I want to do a handstand, that's great. But I think being flexible enough with yourself to, you know, let the timeline be fluid, you know, and not assume that because this person did it then you should be able to do it then. And, you know, kind of drop the comparison. I think that would help a lot.
Can yoga change our physical bodies? Like, can it make us thinner and stronger and stuff?
I think it depends what kind of classes you're doing. I used to teach more rigorous vinyasa flow, and that absolutely. If you're just doing like very gentle restorative yoga, if weight loss is your goal, that probably isn't the best match for your goals. But, you know, I think it's a combination of so many things. You do have to be eating well, and it's all about moderation, and it all depends on the style. So it can, but you have to choose wisely.
Right, totally. Well, this is perfect because the next one of the creed is bad yogis are real people, not impossibly fit, flexible, and flashy representations of yogi stereotypes. Yes. And we touched upon this a lot, but I mean, to talk about flexibility for a second, I can't touch my toes and I always feel like the biggest loser in a class. Can yoga make us more flexible?
Totally. I mean, yes, it can. I mean, I think when you practice, I've said this in my classes before. So, you know, when you practice anything for any period of time, progress is inevitable. So yeah, if you're like, okay, I really want to touch my toes, and every day you spend 10 minutes doing stretches that help you touch your toes, I promise you, you will be getting closer. So yeah. I can't promise you a time frame that that'll happen, but you will be on your way. So as you know, assuming there's no like, you know, you didn't like break a hip and you have no, you know, whatever. So it's like, yes, yoga can make you a lot of things, but you also have to remember that you are who you are, and you're not necessarily like that one teacher that you wish you had her biceps or whatever it is, or you wish you could do everything she does, etc. It's like we're all individual people, and we choose to compare ourselves to like one ideal or one made up ideal that's not even real, you know?
True.
So we just have to, it's a slippery slope.
Is yoga easier for people that are flexible? Because I wouldn't know, but it looks a lot easier. Like, I mean, I find yoga to be very challenging. Even Warrior 2 is like the hardest thing in the entire world for me. I cannot like twist my hips the right way. It is so hard. Is it easier for people that are flexible?
You know, I think it's interesting because it depends who you ask. So, if you're flexible, certain things are going to be more accessible to you. But if you have more strength than you do flexibility, then there'll be things that are more accessible to you than to a flexible person. Mm. And I can speak from experience there because I was always more on the flexible side and less on the strong side. Okay. So when people could do handstands, but not a split, I was like, I could do splits all day. Somebody teach me how to handstand, you know? So
grass, I think, is always greener.
Exactly.
But is yoga supposed to be hard? I mean, more like challenging, and right. And it's just mind blowing how you'll be in a, like, Warrior 2 is so simple in theory, but it is very hard. It's challenging. You're like, what? It's a lot shaking. Of a mental struggle. You're shaking. You're sweating. You're like, how am I sweating? I'm standing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What is it? Is it hard? Is it challenging like that for everyone? Is it intended to be?
My answer has a couple of layers because, again, like, it depends where you go, what class you're in, because sometimes, like, different teachers will focus on intensity and try to make it hard, aka challenging, whatever. And then other classes are meant to, like, calm, relax you, no, go easy, whatever. So that, yeah, that depends. But when you're thinking about Warrior 2, like you said, I think it is absolutely made to challenge your body. I mean, it 100% is, you're resisting gravity. Mm. So, and a lot of these poses are, and sequences, you know, like the vinyasa sequence, for example, like Surya Namaskar, the sun salutations, I mean, those are meant to kind of get the heart rate up a little bit. They're meant to build strength. They're meant to build endurance. They're meant for that. They're meant to condition the body. If you work through your physical anxieties, you know, like when you let a little kid run around outside before you tell him to come in and get ready to go to bed, you know, you got to like work all this off before you can relax.
And I just took my dog to the park for that exact reason. Yeah, so he would be quiet for this interview. I'm like, okay, we're going to burn you out.
Exactly. And in yoga, the end goal is always the meditation. Like that's always the culmination. Oh. So it's like, you've got to kind of work through whatever is in your mind, work through whatever's in your body, the discomforts, the imbalances, so that you can get to this finish line and get as much out of that as possible.
I didn't know that. Wait, let's pull that back one sec. So you said the end goal is the 3-minute meditation at the end?
Well,
or however long it is.
In a perfect world, like if you go way back to the beginning, like yoga was like a deeply spiritual practice, and it was heavily based on meditation. So now, of course, like you see, you know, in New York and where I used to teach, I mean, we had a very athletic studio.
I mean, it's just a place to wear Lululemon here in New York. That's all it is. To wear the latest.
So, you know, I think, and I don't say this in a negative sense at all. I think it's fine. But, you know, we've kind of diluted it to fit how our culture wants it. And so we've inversed the importance a little bit, which I don't, you know, I don't think that's good or bad. It is what it is. It's fine. And so I think that it is meant to be challenging, no matter which side you look at it.
And so the meditation is really supposed to be, I mean, I've heard classes where the teacher's like, the meditations where you reap all the benefits, and they really have stressed, like, don't try not to move, because I don't know. Well, why is that? They're like, don't move in the meditation, especially in like hot yoga classes I've done. They're like, don't wipe your sweat.
Oh my God.
Is that a That's thing?
Funny.
Is that going to ruin the meditation forever?
No. So, okay. I think that all depends on teacher and student. So I taught hot yoga for 2 years when I taught full time. Hot yoga was what I taught for the most part. So I never told someone not to wipe their sweat. It depends where you're trained and like what your discipline is going back. Discipline, I'm saying in the way that, you know, how you were trained.
Yeah.
Is what I'm talking about. So yeah, it depends like who trained you and everything to what your philosophy is there. But, personally, I don't care. I know that there's a reason behind it, but I'm blanking on it right now. It has to do with like toxins, I believe.
Okay. Something like that. Whatever.
But, yeah, in terms of not moving in the meditation, I think you've got to do what you got to do. I think it's more difficult if you start telling yourself you can't do this.
Right.
You can't do that. Like as soon as you lie down, if you're like, okay, now don't move. You're like, but my foot is itching and it really is bothering me or whatever.
And then it starts itching more because you're not allowed to itch it.
Exactly. I think you just kind of, for me anyway, the best practice is to just like, okay, now you're free and you have to, you relax. So your intention is to relax and soften and kind of reflect. But the intention is not to like boss yourself around even more, you know?
Well, that's what's so great about you and this whole bad yogi thing. You're all just like, just you do you, you know?
Totally, yeah.
Yoga's not this, it sounds like, I don't know the right way to put it, but I feel like yoga has been put into a box with our society of like, this is what it is. But it's not like saying it's a soul cycle class or something where they're like, every class should be the same, where you do the arms and you have the music and you go really, really fast and it's all crazy. But like yoga is more of like, not like a way of life, but it's just so much broader, yes. Right? It's just, it's not the same thing as saying a soul cycle class.
Yes, but I think you said it, you know, like a way of life. Yeah, that sounds cheesy, but it's
true. It does sound really cheesy.
But it's true. You know, it's like if you look at a painting and you're like, I love exactly what this looks like. This is like amazing. It's beautiful. I want it. Somebody else comes and says, I hate purple, you know? I mean, neither of you is right or wrong. It is just, that's just your interpretation. So I think all of these yoga classes, if we just see them as, that's this teacher's interpretation, that's this teacher's interpretation, then we can start to, number one, feel more free to explore. Like, just because you went to this and you didn't like it doesn't mean yoga's not for you.
Right.
It just means that now you have to try something else, try a new teacher or whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, yoga has been adapted, but no one person, I don't think, has it 100% nailed down. Like, oh, this is the only type. This is the only style, you know.
It's more of like a thing that everyone just makes their own, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your own, my last favorite pillar is bad yogis define their own practice.
There you go.
So that was not planned. It really wasn't. But I'm wondering, how could somebody like myself begin to really define a pretty infrequent practice? Like, what does that mean to have a practice? Does it mean it's a routine thing that we have in our lives, or explain that a little?
Okay, so I this is, again, this is just me. This is just my opinion. But I'm like, I think all you need is for you to have a quote practice, just claim it. I mean, you call it what it is, you know? So it's like, okay, I have a yoga practice. I mean, yeah, I try to do it like twice a week. So it's not as frequent as I would like, but you know, that is what it is. And other people's practice will be, I have a practice every single morning at 6 o'clock. I get up and I do whatever amount, and that's their practice. So I think, I mean, just because it's less frequent or more frequent doesn't make it any more real or not real. So I think that it's as simple as defining it the way you want to.
Can you reap benefits from not doing it every day?
Yes. Not doing it every day, yes. If you do it, like, if your goal is to touch your toes and you do it once every 2 weeks, you're probably not going to get very close, very far, but you'll get the mental benefits, surely.
Okay.
But, you know, so you'll have that little yoga high after your class, and hopefully that carries on a little while after. But I think 10 minutes every day or every other day is better than 90 minutes, you know, once a week, to be very honest.
I like that. That's good to know.
And then you get the compounding, you know, and it becomes a habit. And I think it's a good thing to keep in mind.
So you can reap benefits from a 10-minute yoga practice?
100%, yes.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know if I believe you. I feel like 10 minutes is so short. Do you have to do like a lot of things in those 10 minutes? Do you have 10-minute classes on your site?
Well, first, like the Bad Yogi Club is free, like on badyogiofficial.com. And I send out free classes every Monday. And those are about 10 to 12 minutes, give or take a little bit. And they absolutely, like, I mean, I film them. I mean, it absolutely is helpful. It is functional. It's useful. And I always, always feel better after. So, you know, that's like asking, if does a cup of warm water and lemon really do anything if you drink it every day? Well, yeah, it's going to do something doing it every day.
Touche. You know? Touche. So tell us again where we can get, I mean, I'll link it in the show notes, but it's badyogiofficial.com.
Yes. .com.
And we can join, what's the club?
Bad Yogi Club. Yeah, it's free. It's just every Monday I do free classes. Every Wednesday is Q&As and a bunch of other secret things that I only put there.
Is there a clubhouse?
I wish. That'd be cool. In a tree somewhere.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. I like that we can do 10 minutes a day and really reap benefits. So benefits that you could reap from 10 minutes a day would include, I'm just going to make them up and you tell me if they're right.
Yeah.
Okay, greater flexibility. Is that a thing?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell me what they are? So I'm not just pulling them out of my butt.
I'm stuck. Definitely greater flexibility, strength, mental clarity, focus, being less stressed.
You know, let's talk about that less stressed thing for one second. Mm-hmm. I have found that a run is much more effective for me to release anxiety than a yoga class. I think with yoga, I get all up in my head and I feel like I'm trapped in the room and I can't, like, I have so much energy and anxiousness that I need to bust out, and I run is just like, ugh. So can yoga actually help with that? Am I mistaken for thinking that it makes it worse? For me?
No, not at all. So, okay, there's two things. So the first thing I think is that everybody is different. So I actually do believe that while everybody can do yoga, not everybody's number one favorite thing in the world has to be yoga, you know? So, if you feel more stress relief by going for a run than you do from a yoga class, okay, lots of people do. And I get it. If I'm really pissed off or really stressed out, I need to go walk outside by the water, you know, and then I can kind of be clear, because the first thing that I'm going to do is not sit in silence and meditate. That's right. Not the first thing I'm going to do. So it's like, I think we all have different first responses, I'll call them.
I like that.
And so, you know, if yours is running, then hell yeah, that's fine, you know? So I don't think that people who would think like you would have to force themselves to fit into this yoga box and be like, well, yoga is stress relieving, so I have to make it work, you know?
Right.
So I think that, yeah, I can. And if especially if it's in conjunction with another practice that does that just as much.
Right. Okay. I feel a little free knowing that.
Yeah. Good.
Because I've always been like, well, yoga is supposed to make you feel calmer. So why don't you want to go to a yoga class when you're stressed? you know, and then I will sometimes force myself to go. And then I'm like, oh my God, this is, I'm freaking out. Just breathe. Oh my God, you're the worst at Warrior Two. You suck. What's wrong with you? Okay, breathe. Which is actually kind of good because you're like, I'm fighting this inner battle. And I don't know, it's empowering at the end to like have made it through that class.
Yeah.
But it's a struggle.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you have to go with your instinct. And in your case, it sounds like your instinct is like, okay, run, you know, you need to run it off and then maybe go to the yoga class the next morning, you know?
Right.
But I think that's totally fine.
Well, do you think there is anything wrong with someone forcing themselves to kind of do yoga? Because I do feel that I need some more of it in my life. I don't know. Maybe I just think that because other people do it. But I also would like to feel more flexible, just physically. I want to feel like I can move more. Is it okay for me to kind of have to really buckle down with myself and force myself to go until it becomes more comfortable for myself?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think it's like, you know, going back to food, you know, it's like if you force yourself to eat broccoli, do you get any fewer benefits than if you loved it while you ate it? I mean, probably not by much. So, you know, if you're like, okay, for me, you know, I have to like set a schedule. So I'm like, okay, I want to do this thing that's good for me. So I can't just leave it to myself to be like, I'm going to feel like doing it hopefully this other day. But I'll be like, every Tuesday, that is the day that I do this, like non-negotiable, that is it.
Yeah.
And if it's a certain amount of time, like I'm going to do it for, you know, 3 months, see how it goes, reflect on it, then, you know, set a thing. So I think if people are struggling, or if you're struggling with making it consistent or a habit,
yeah,
you know, put it on paper, quote unquote, put it in stone, make it a thing.
Okay. Because I just didn't know. It just seems like everybody that does yoga is like, I love my yoga. I can't go a day without it. Right. I crave it. I love it. And I'm like I'll go to a class, but I have to like force myself. And I just didn't know if that was bad.
No,
but I guess that makes me a good bad yogi.
Good bad yogi.
So in terms of home practices and using your 10-minute to 12-minute videos, would you say that an at-home yoga practice where we're just doing it in our living room or office or bedroom or hallway or whatever is in some way worse or not as good as a in-studio practice?
Good question. I think it depends on who you are. So some people, like it's funny because I had a couple of years ago, I did a 30-day yoga challenge online where I did videos that were like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And, you know, I expected like my mom to sign up and like maybe 50 people would sign up. And it turned out to go like completely viral. We had like 12 million views on the videos and it was crazy. And people were like changed by it. I mean, the comments on this was like, it was out of control, amazing, right? And so I was like, this is phenomenal. And then I would go to the studio where I taught at and teach, and people there would be like, oh my God, I could never do a video at home. Like, I would never do yoga at home. I can't believe that, you know? Huh. And so I think some people, it depends, you know? Some people like that kind of privacy, freedom to just like, yeah, I'm going to do this with like in my pajamas so I don't have to wear a bra. And, right. You know,
so I can look as stupid as I want. No one's going to judge me.
Exactly. Exactly. So there is a huge freedom to doing it at home. You know, you have the time. If you need to like sneeze or you need to go to the bathroom, you just hit pause, you go. So there's that element. I think it just depends on what appeals to you. But in terms of, do you get more like some kind of more mystical, magical benefit by being in a studio versus home? Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Except the ideal would be if I could train my dog to come over to me at the end with essential oil on his hands and put it on my shoulders and my nose. Oh, okay. That's the best. I mean, you don't really get that in yoga classes anymore, really. I mean, I think you have to go to really special studios, but that's the best part.
I totally agree. Nice little adjustment in like child's pose. Yes.
Awesome. So I'm going to ask you just a few personal questions now about plants because I love my plants. So I'm wondering what your favorite plant party restaurant is. Just a restaurant where you can get really good veggie-based dishes.
Oh my goodness. So well, tough. Can I give one? I'll give one Hold on, let me think. Okay, I'm going to give one in my hometown in Florida, and I'll give one here in France. So in Florida, there's an amazing restaurant called Ohana Cafe, and it's run by this woman from Hawaii, and she is like, she literally, you think you're coming home to your mother when you go there. She greets you. She hugs you. She's like, I'm so glad you're here. Like, sit down. It's amazing. And if I'm not mistaken, they're vegan, but they're macadamia nut pancakes with this like macadamia nut sauce that tastes like frosting. It is completely out of control. So that's my number one.
Where is that in Florida?
That is in Dunedin, Florida, which is, it's pretty close to Tampa. It's maybe like 25 minutes away from Tampa.
Okay. That sounds delicious.
That's ridiculous. And then here in Nice, my favorite place is called Cajou, C-A-J-U. And it's run by these two, this couple, and they're vegan. So everything there is like, you know, handmade, homemade, et cetera, organic, all the highest quality ingredients. And super creative dishes. Like they have a veggie burger that's made with, I haven't been able to mentally break it down, but you know, there's like, there's, it's all plant-based. So awesome. Most of it is raw and it's just delicious. So that's in Nice, great. France.
Well, yeah. If anyone's going to Nice, you have a Nice, nice place to go.
Absolutely.
That's so cool. Do you teach yoga in studios out there?
No, I don't. I just, I stick to my little community bubble, yeah. Bad Yogi Online. Yeah.
The clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly.
Pull down the clubhouse. That's cool. Have you taken classes though? Is it different?
Oh, like another world different. It's crazy.
How so? Just briefly, just how is it different? Yeah. I'm curious. Besides a language maybe barrier.
Yes, totally. It's different because people here are, it's kind of like, think of yoga like 10 years ago in the States. So it's very, very, very basic and very, it's kind of like everybody's kind of a beginner in a way, honestly. Mm-hmm. So like even the teachers, nobody is doing like handstands, arm balances, inversions, nice. At all, nothing. It's super.
Like down to earth, it sounds like.
Yes, very bare bones. And an older, like young women aren't doing yoga here. It's mainly like middle-aged people.
Oh, it's not cool and hip yet.
No, not really. At least in Nice. Paris is probably a different story, but yeah. In Nice, it's definitely not.
Cool. So interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's neat. So what is your favorite plant to eat?
Ooh, that is tough. I, even though I'm a bad yogi and I love real burgers, yes. I do eat a lot of vegetables. So favorite plant. This is really weird because it is literally a plant, but it's my absolute favorite thing in the world. Sage. It's the herb.
Yeah.
I mean, I am obsessed with sage. I love the smell. I bought a plant for it. You know, I bought a sage plant. And so every time I walk by it in the kitchen, I have to like rub my hands all over it. And like, I'm this poor plant. I mean,
interesting. That's literally a plant. And that's really interesting.
I love it. And I love to cook with sage. It's just delicious to me.
What do you do? Like, what's your favorite way to enjoy it besides smelling it in your hands?
How do I ingest it?
Yeah.
I put it in, I love it in soup. So I make like butternut squash soup and then I'll just like chop a little bit and put it, just kind of sprinkle it on top. I also like to bake it into breads, what? Which is really good, like the different herbs. And that is really yum. Delicious. So that's pretty weird and
that
random.
Is weird. I don't think I will ever hear that again in the life
you
of this podcast.
Me, okay?
Yeah, if I do, I'm going to connect you with whatever soul named Sage is their favorite plant.
Right.
Oh, man, that's so funny. So do you have a favorite piece of kitchen equipment?
You know, I'm very – I have to have like a shout out to my Vitamix, which I can't use anymore.
Because of the outlet?
Yes, I haven't bought a transformer for it yet because – you know how when you go to Europe or any other country, you have like the little plug that'll transfer the...
Yeah.
Okay, so it's not that. It's called a transformer, which converts the voltage, which this thing is weighs like 30 pounds. It is about the size of a shoebox.
The transformer?
So I have to plug that into the Vitamix and then into the wall. So I just haven't bothered.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit intimidating.
So I don't know. My stove? I don't really have any... Besides that, I don't really use anything fancy, to be honest with you. I cook everything on the stovetop, and I have a tiny little, like a hand blender.
Yeah.
An immersion blender is what I
call it. Cool.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
My other favorite, if there's a runner-up, it is without a doubt my espresso machine.
Okay. There you go. That's perfect. Yeah. That's cool. So is there a book that has really improved your life in some awesome way?
This is probably another really corny answer, but it's something that I always go back to. When Eat, Pray, Love first came out in 2006, I read that book. So I used to be obsessed with Oprah. I mean, who am I kidding? I'm still obsessed with Oprah. But I used to watch the Oprah show every single day, like without fail. That was like my church, you know? And so Elizabeth Gilbert was on Oprah and talking about her book. And I was like, you know, this is just speaking to me for some reason. And when I bought that book, I read it, I devoured it, I made notes in it. It's like completely tagged up. And that was kind of I can't believe I'm going to say this, but that was one of the first introductions to like spirituality in a practical context that I had ever encountered. So that was really kind of a shift in my life for sure.
Wow. Wait, so this was 2006, you said?
Yeah.
So it was 10 years ago. You had already been practicing or at least teaching for a year, but you were just kind of doing reading all the traditional texts and didn't really see it applying to like modern life.
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Cool. Have you been to India?
Nope.
Do you plan to go ever?
Not in my, it's kind of like I want to have gone, but I don't feel like going right now. But one of my best girlfriends is like dying to take me. So I probably will get suckered into that.
You got to eat, pray, love. You're already doing the eating. You're in Europe. Yeah. So you got that. Exactly. And you got your French man.
Exactly.
So you got that. Check. She calls her, your fiance, Frenchman? Frenchman?
I do, yes. Frenchman.
Frenchman. When I read out loud, in my head, I'm like, Frenchman. I guess Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, so where can everybody go to stalk you and Frenchman and all the bad yogi stuff? And if I'm sure there are people listening that just feel like this spoke to them and that your movement, I really think it's a movement, is just calling them and you're redefining yoga. You're making it so much less douchey, for lack of a better word. And I love you for it. So where should people go?
You on that?
Sure. Pull that quote.
So the number one place is definitely the Bad Yogi Club. That's where I'm kind of the most present. So that's just free. You can just sign up on badyogiofficial.com. And then of course on Instagram, I'm also at Bad Yogi Official, and on Facebook, I'm just under Bad Yogi. And that is
how come official? It. Why so official?
Bad Yogi Official. That was the available handle.
So somebody already has Bad Yogi? Someone that sucks at yoga?
Well, no, they're not even a yogi. They have 3 followers or something, really. They're not a yoga person. Yeah.
Okay, so Bad Yogi. Well, I mean, it's pretty legit official. Bad Yogi Official. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been such a blast talking to you.
Absolutely. Likewise, it was super fun.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Might you have just uncovered your true bad yogi self? I think it's pretty clear that I'm a bad yogi. Bad yogi to the bone. Hey, if you can think of one other bad yogi in your life or a good yogi in your life who could benefit from this show in their ears, please share it with them. And for the spark notes of this episode and loads more that makes being healthy not sucky, pop over to partyinmyplants.com/36.